We're wrapping up season two, and we've had so many incredible conversations that we decided to cap off our season with a few of the mic drop moments that are worth repeating.
I know, because of these conversations, I now feel so much more confident in how I talk to my healthcare practitioner and how I navigate our healthcare system.
Well, yeah, it's like understanding what's worth spending money on and when, in fact, something is too good to be true, because there's a lot of that out there. And it's not just about managing the physical symptoms. It's about changing how we decide to show up in this world.
Oh, my God, agreed. I've learned so much about perimenopause, but it's also about life stuff.
Yes, because as we say, it's hard to tell where perimenopause ends and everyday life begins.
Yep, bang on. Let's start our highlight reel with the incredible Gina Livy. For anyone whose midsection changed overnight, this episode is for you.
I always say people can eat a lot of food. It doesn't mean that the food that they're eating has a lot of nutrient value.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really about giving your body good nutrient-rich foods that give your body the resources it needs to make change. And so here's the flawed concept of calories in versus calories out, eating less, exercising more. You can starve and deprive yourself, restrict your body from the nutrients it needs, and it will dip into and utilize your fat reserves. But in doing that, you are also simultaneously teaching the body that it needs that fat because you keep using it. Mm. And so the body stores a certain amount of fat for emergency purposes, like those times when you are starved and deprived and don't have access to food. The problem is we have all the access to food, most of us, that we could possibly ask for. And so it's the act of forcing your body to burn fat. Yes, you will lose weight that way, but you will never be able to sustain and maintain it, because the first chance it gets, the body's going to store all that fat back plus more. And so this is why you have to figure out, why is your body feeling a need to store fat? It's not the chocolate that you're having after a stressful day. It's constantly doing deprivation diets, going long periods of time without eating, overeating when you do eat, combined with high stress, high cortisol levels, lack of sleep. When you're tired, you crave carbs and sugar, and then your body processes those foods differently. It's about being stressed and utilizing food to cope day in, day out. And then when you do overeat something, punish yourself the next day by starving and depriving again. And that is what teaches the body. Like, the body's so smart. It's trying to figure out how to keep you alive. And imagine, what would the body do if you kept going through periods of constant starvation? Every time you did get your hands on food, the body's going to store that and be like, whoa, we're going to need this for next time. We're going to be starved and deprived, which happens quite regularly around here. And so, you know, people like to come up with gimmicky things. And there is some truth in some of the diets. And that's where I was I've been around for the evolution of the diet and seeing, okay, well, maybe it's not high protein. It's just making sure you're getting in the protein when you need it and getting enough. It's not low carb. It's actually right carbs at the right time, getting them in earlier in your day when you need them rather than at night when you're about to go to bed. And so there was truth. Fasting, for example, people have taken fasting way out of control, and there is a benefit for it if you're doing long-term fasting for health benefits, not for weight loss. But it makes sense to not eat after dinner at night when your body's trying to wind down for sleep so your body can repair and rebuild and do the things that it does when you sleep. It makes sense that you don't have to eat right when you wake up because you're waking up, you're already full of energy. But this people has taken everything to the extremes and not figured out, oh, so there's bits and pieces of truth. What does the body actually need to function on the most optimal levels? So if you give your body what it needs and you address why it's feeling a need to store fat, your body would be more than happy to be like, I don't need this fat. It's not healthy for me. Let me get rid of it. And then support the body and its needs. Everyone's trying to control, moderate. Mm. Those are two words that I think don't belong when it comes to losing weight: control and moderation. You don't need to control anything, and you're not trying to moderate anything. You're trying to be in tune to your body's needs.
This was a huge learning for us. We spent a ton of money in the past on testing to find out if we were in perimenopause and if hormones would be safe for us. Turns out there is no test we can do for any of this. Here's one of our favorite experts, Dr. Jen Zelovinsky.
Could we just, for first-time listeners, right, that you do not need
to have a test of any kind.
Yeah.
To be prescribed hormone therapy. You may need some testing to rule out other causes, right?
Yeah.
But it's a clinical diagnosis, meaning it's based on your symptoms, correct?
Correct. Correct. So Dr. Susan Davis, who yes. we all know and love,
yeah.
is the expert in this area of care. And I've heard her explain this in such a beautiful way that I now use for patients. So first of all, when we give Health Canada preparations for hormone therapy, we know exactly what you're getting, and we are keeping it well within tight therapeutic and normal levels for what is expected even post-menopause, right? Like, we're never overshooting the mark. It's not even possible. But secondly, there's no blood test that can tell us the most important thing, which is how your receptors, your estrogen and progesterone receptors, are responding to the hormone therapy. Serum levels tell us nothing about how rapidly you're clearing it, how well you're absorbing it, and how adaptable and responsive your receptors are to that hormone therapy. And this was mind-blowing to me, because this is such a brilliant way to understand it, because it is, I constantly am asked, I need to check my levels. I want to see where it's at. I do a baseline level because you're right. I need to make sure the thyroid's okay. I need to make sure there isn't a pituitary tumor that's causing their periods to stop unexpectedly, right? Those kinds of things, they need to be ruled out. And because often I'm just meeting these people for the first time, I'm not their family doctor. I need their cardiovascular history, their blood sugar levels, all of those things. And I do a hormone level, maybe if we're just wanting a baseline to confirm if they're in menopause. You know, women who've had a hysterectomy or have a Mirena, we might not know if they're in menopause or not. And so it's a good way to, because we can't just go on period history. If you had your uterus removed but retained your ovaries, well, they're still giving off estrogens. You're not in menopause, even though you're not having periods. So it can be useful, but you're right. And if someone's saying you need blood testing, that is a red flag.
If you're one of the lucky people who don't have perimenopausal symptoms.
We hate you.
yeah, we hate you. Kidding aside, regardless of whether you have symptoms or not, everyone's health risks increase with menopause. Here's the amazing Dr. Sarah Shaw with the risks you need to understand and start managing to support your health span.
But I think sometimes if you can just say to women, like, I'm going to help you through this. It's going to take multiple appointments, and that's okay. That's normal. That is a part of the process. But I'm going to stick with you through this, and we're going to figure out what works for you.
Can you be everyone's doctor?
Thank you.
Please.
Could we talk a little bit about why understanding what happens in this transition and being mindful about prevention is so important? Could you share a little bit about that?
Thank you for asking. There most certainly is. I mean, having a check-in at menopause and looking at prevention and optimizing your health is really the gateway to healthy aging. Like, this is where it starts. This is where our risks increase dramatically. Our risk for mental health, for depression and anxiety, our risk for decreasing cognitive function, our risk for cardiovascular disease, our risk for losing muscle, bone density. This is really important. We're lucky in Canada that we have a healthcare system, but we have limited healthcare dollars. Our healthcare system is built on responding to illness and disease. It's not built on prevention and health promotion, but that's exactly what women need, especially at midlife. I think bone density is one of the key examples of this. So we know before menopause, if you've been lucky enough to build peak bone mass, the average woman is going to lose 12% of their bone density through the menopause years, and some women are going to lose 20%. Now, if we actually had a conversation about what's your bone density now, get a bone density test, talk about what risks are, like did your mother or your sister or your aunt have a hip fracture, those kinds of things, we can actually prevent you from losing all that bone density.
Feel like you're skidding into menopause? Take a listen to this clip with Dr. Kirsten Smith, naturopath/unicorn. She's got the hard facts on what it takes to stop the skid.
What I'm always saying to patients is that the reality is that it's a much bigger story.
I think it's starting that the conversation is starting to expand as it should, not just to be so frantic about the menopause hormone therapy, the HRT. It's starting to expand into the bigger story. And that is one of like, what are all the things that we should be doing to prevent cardiovascular disease, which kills more people, more women are a long shot over 50 than anything else. You know, what else can we do to improve our bone health, which is the second killer of women? You know, it's also just a big come to Jesus moment for people, because the reality is, if you're lucky, you've made it to your middle life. You know, if you're lucky, I have a lot of people who are, I have a lot of people who haven't been, you know, they have other health issues. But for people who haven't really had to face themselves in terms of self-care, it's a big moment of inflection, because they have to start to realize that it's not just about HRT or not and whatnot. It's about realizing that your metrics have changed, the landscape has changed, and the playbook has changed. The inattention and the lack of research and the lack of focus on a valuable tool, which is hormone therapy, is only one part of the problem. Like, women live longer and they have much shittier quality of life than men, like by a long shot, in the second half of their life. And this is a big story, because it's like, well, you know, and a lot of women they come skidding in, as I do.
Oh my God, that is a
great visual.
So
oh my God. Fantastic.
Yeah, you come flying in, because most people are guns a-blazing. They've got old parents that might be ill or dying.
Times three.
Yeah, and they may or may not have kids, and they're supposed to be at the peak of their career. And then they're just put on their back like a turtle with their, like, kind of being like, I can't, you know, and it's so shocking to people. Rightfully so. And the thing is, it just, you know, it's really different, and it's really worth people accepting the truth, because that's where the power is, right? If you just go in like a turtle and you don't know what's going on and you're flipped on your back, and then you also think, I'll just do HRT and it's all good, then you're just not going to have a strong few decades, you know? And I think that's the thing I'm always telling my patients, like, this is the beginning, and it, you know, it can feel depressing and overwhelming. It feels very negative, but the other side of that is power, in terms of just having way more agency. And it is depressing to say this, but the truth is that a lot of, not just this corner, but a lot of aspects of women's health have not been deemed important. Like that New York Times journalist said a couple years ago, like, we have a high cultural tolerance for women's suffering. And at the end of the day, women really need to realize, like, they need to get educated, which is why your platform is of such value, and they just need to do it, and they need to just embrace, because then if you have all the pieces of information, you can engage and you can kind of change your life. And because the playbook has changed, you can do the things that you maybe need to do if you want to remain healthy or not, but you can do it.
But, and here's the thing too, though, like, I feel like we live in this society right now where these women are skidding in. And as you said, I love that. And they're hearing that HRT is the magic bullet, a lot of them. And they're also looking for, like, we feel like shit. So we're looking for a quick fix. We want something to fix this. And we don't have to grin and bear. We don't have to suffer. But there's a bit of work involved. It's not just taking a pill or supplementing yourself into good health. Like, you do need to put in a little bit of work here, and whether it's the lifestyle changes or this, you know, improving your sleep or whatever it happens to be, but there is some work here as well. And, and unfortunately, we're already fucking tired and exhausted and overworked, and it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah. I don't like to sugarcoat it with people in any capacity, but that's the art of practice, like you just described, which is like, you know, if I'm really going to help, I always think about this and I always teach this, like, if I'm really going to help someone in a relatively easy way, like, figure out the low hanging fruit so that they feel better enough to connect to a bigger story, which is like, you know, it's a sliding doors moment. I mean, like, listen, that sort of totally dates me, but the point is it is.
It's all, we're all the same age, Kirsten.
Everybody knows. I mean, it just is. And you know, you either, and I do have patients who they get like what I'm doing with them and they understand the point, but it's really hard. And so it does, if you can help people grab onto something and feel better in a meaningful way quickly, then you can get into habit stacking.
This next clip with Janet Koh, co-founder of the Menopause Foundation of Canada, is the clip I so desperately needed to hear 10 years ago. It's not burnout it's perimenopause.
Janet, welcome. We're so excited to have you with us today. To start, we know a little bit about your menopausal journey from Trish when we had her on the show. And we'd like to get a little more detail about that and understand your journey, your background, and what prompted you to co-found the Menopause Foundation of Canada.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here and to join you to have this conversation. I like to describe my menopause journey as being one of being blindsided by menopause. So I was somebody who actually really looked forward to menopause because I just thought, no more periods. It's going to be great. Woo-hoo. And at the height of my professional career, I started to have these symptoms that I had no idea were part of the menopause transition because I had never heard of the word perimenopause. So I started to have things like brain fog, joint pain, body aches. I could not sleep. I was waking up multiple times at night. I had heart palpitations that scared me so much, I ended up in the emergency room thinking I was having a heart attack. And every healthcare professional I saw said that I was a very healthy woman, but I did not feel healthy. I felt quite ill. So my understanding of menopause really came by looking in the rearview mirror. Once I reached menopause and I started to have hot flashes, I thought, okay, now I'm getting close to menopause. I never connected the perimenopause until I was well into menopause and started to learn. So my knowledge came by looking, you know, through the rearview mirror. Once I started taking hormone therapy and within a week felt better and began this journey of just recognizing and understanding what an injustice it is to women that they do not understand the changes that are happening to their body, that the healthcare community lacks the confidence and the knowledge to provide care and treatment, and that society really trivializes what women are experiencing at this stage of life.
So true. Correct me if I'm wrong. You come from a pharmaceutical background as well?
I've worked in healthcare related sectors. I was a senior vice president, and at the age of 48, I walked away from my career at that level, thinking that I was burnt out. But the reality was that I was really struggling with these symptoms of perimenopause that I was not treating. So once I got the treatment and started to feel better, you realize that it was very unnecessary. And certainly the trajectory of my career and my quality of life would have been very different if I had understood and known and was able to connect the dots.
It's like we're gaslighting ourselves during this phase. We're like, no, I'm just stressed out. Oh, I just can't handle this. So I think it's so important what you're doing and the work that you're doing to help bring awareness to women and just make it easier for the people coming up behind us. What has been the most important intervention or change that you've made? I guess HRT, I'm gonna guess, but is there anything else that you've made, any other interventions or changes you've made to support your menopause journey?
Well, I don't think it's one thing. I mean, for me, clearly, the menopause hormone therapy was a game changer. And I think it's a real tragedy that we are still afraid to take it, that women are still confused about it, and that doctors actually lack the confidence to provide this treatment to the millions of women who would truly benefit from receiving the gold standard, evidence-based treatment of choice to manage the bulk of, you know, the menopausal symptoms that women experience. So for me, that was certainly a game changer. But I think the reality is that I would see myself as being like many women where I did not prioritize my health throughout my life. And I think many women put their own health last. So whether that is regular exercise, you know, taking care of what you're eating, all of those things are critically important when you reach menopause. So it's a big opportunity to maybe for the first time in your life, start to really reflect on how much energy you're investing into making sure that you are healthy. And that's what I've been trying to do. And it's not easy. And it's not easy when women are not feeling good. So, you know, we tell women, well, you should be, you know, having good sleep hygiene and you should be moving more and eating better. But if you are really struggling with some of these symptoms, you do not have the energy, you know, to actually take those steps. So sometimes we need to make sure that we're getting treatment that might help us to fall asleep at night, that might make those hot flashes go away. And there are so many phenomenal options that are available to us now that are hormonal and non-hormonal. So many, many things that people can do.
Next up, we've got Shirley Weir. She's the OG menopause chick, and she has a message that everyone needs on their bathroom mirror, their computer screen. I'm talking post-it notes everywhere. It's your daily reminder. Perimenopause is not a synonym for suffering.
I have a daughter who's 21. So she was quite young when I started this journey, and my son as well. And they have grown up with their mother being a menopause chick. So every day I am here doing this because their generation is going to have an easier time.
I love this.
Yeah. So, so important. You know, in your role as a health advocate, what are some of the biggest misconceptions and myths that you see that are persisting?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest misperceptions is that women are meant to suffer. And then into this conversation, it's that the words perimenopause and menopause and postmenopause are synonyms for symptoms and suffering. Those are a lot of S words, but perimenopause is not a synonym for suffering. It's a life phase. Do some of us suffer? Absolutely. Do we deserve to feel amazing? Absolutely. So let's close the gap on, you know, getting from A to B. But a headline, you know, a magazine headline or a search engine optimized headline on an, you know, on a blog post, it doesn't do any of us any good if all it does is to continue to perpetuate this, you know, when a girl gets her period, she can expect pain. And then for the next 90 years, let's just tell her all the ways that she can suffer. That's not right. But there's another M word that is not being discussed all that much, and that is money.
Yeah.
Anytime you put 1 billion women into a spreadsheet, the business case will get approved. It doesn't matter if it's evidence-based. It doesn't matter if it's leaning into old stereotypes. It doesn't matter if it's continuing to push women down. If it's making bankroll, it goes through.
Can we talk a little bit about that? Because some of our listeners might not know what you mean by evidence-based information. So when they're going to Dr. Google, there's a lot of stuff out there. What is evidence-based information? What should they be looking for? How do they find it?
Google is not a doctor. Google is an ad platform that made $232 billion in ad revenue last year. It's not even a library.
No.
If we can stop thinking about Google as a library, we will make some inroads in this, because you and I could be the same age with the same date of last period looking for the same information, and Google's algorithm will feed us different content. Mm-hmm. So I can't even, it's really, really hard to even use evidence-based information in the same sentence as Google.
So where do they find, what is evidence-based information?
Yeah, so evidence-based information is, you know, the output from accredited research organizations or entities. Do we have a lot of places to look in the world of menopause? No, we don't. But we have many, like, world menopause societies who all sing off the same song sheet. Mm-hmm. They are all using and endorsing the same data that is available. That's a bit of a problem because we don't have a ton of research in this world on women's health solely. But taking the data and knowing that that is a reference point. So that's like job one. That's like base level. That's the speed limit on the highway, right? But sometimes you have to drive slower and sometimes you have to drive faster, right? So what's the baseline? And then the next step is for consumers and their health teams, their medical professionals, to be able to interpret that evidence and say, this is what this means for you.
And so in North America, One of the best sources for evidence-based information would be the Menopause Society.
Correct.
Formerly the North American Menopause Society. And some of that is a little bit difficult for women to distill and to understand. So how do they, are there any other sources?
There's a position statement. It's the most recent position statement from the Menopause Society is from 2022. The other day I was thinking about this. I'm like, I bet I've read it like 1,000 times. And then I was like, no, maybe I've read it more than that. Like I refer to sections of that position statement a lot, probably more than any other medical professional, but it is online and available. It's not restricted. Remember the olden days where mm-hmm. you couldn't get to the evidence because it was in a binder on your doctor's shelf? We have to celebrate the fact that that is available. And so if you want to review it yourself, you can. If you want to come to the Menopause Chicks community and have an interpretation, like apply sort of your own experience and get an interpretation. If you want to walk in, print that off and take it into your doctor and say, I've highlighted these two places. I want to talk about this. I think that is amazing.
Our final clip is with Dr. Justine Corey, and it's from an episode that turned into a therapy session. Check out how she coaches Michelle through what a shame bomb is and how to diffuse it.
And so the first thing is actually to understand what's going on, validate the feelings, and give yourself clarity. Okay.
Okay.
So I'll get you to close your eyes for me. So think about the situation with your friend. And we're going to just get you to tune in, and you're going to tell me what bodily sensations you have, what images you have, what emotions you have, and what you're thinking. Okay, so just bring maybe the part of it into your mind that you are finding distressing. And then if you don't mind, just tell me what the image is.
I can just see what, like I'm just playing, replaying the situation in my head.
Okay. Is it from a bird's eye view? Is it from your perspective, or is it how you look to her?
A bird's eye view.
And what is so triggering for you about her response?
I was just shocked.
Okay. All right. Good. Now stay with that feeling and just tell me how you're feeling in your body.
I can feel like really big weighted ball heaviness in my like middle, like upper abdomen.
Okay. All right. Anything in your chest?
Tightening in my chest. Yeah.
And how intense are those feelings right now out of 10?
I would say the strongest is in my stomach, the upper stomach. And that's like an 8 or 9.
Okay. So we've done images. We've done sensations. Okay. Do you know what emotions you'll be having?
Embarrassment, shame.
Okay, good. All right. So that's good. That's the feelings. And then what are you thinking?
Why did I do that? Why did I think that was funny? Why, like, was it not funny?
Okay. Now, you know, if you're in front of me as a client right now, what I'd probably do is take you into a bit of what we call an affect bridge, where we track this feeling through time and we look at other times you've had the same feeling. So you get the sense of continuity about the state. So then you feel and know it's not just about this one time. Okay. It's actually got a bigger pattern in your life, because I imagine that feeling would come up for you in other similar situations.
Yes.
Okay. You know what I call that? That's a shame bomb.
Shame bomb. Yeah, I live in that.
And this goes to show how difficult these schemas can be, because you're fine. And then her reaction, right, has the capacity to just throw your nervous system into complete disarray. And then all of a sudden you're dysregulated, like your brain wants you to keep coming back to it, right?
Yeah. And you know what, though? You just said something. I didn't even think of it as my, like, I was in a parasympathetic state. Like, that, I didn't even, it was all here for me. I didn't even think about the fact that my body is doing fight or flight kind of right now.
Yeah. And, you know, like, so your body thinks you're in danger, which I know is a bit weird. It doesn't make logical sense. But just keep in mind, for a little person, for a child, rejection is dangerous. So the part of your brain that punches out emotions is referring to rules that it learned when you were little. And that's what's coming up now. You quickly learn to tune into yourself like that on the run, on the fly. So you know what's going on. Oh, okay. This is not just about this woman in front of me. I was fine until she disapproved of what I said, or had a reaction that showed her disapproval or rejection of me. Okay, this is my defectiveness schema coming up. I know what this is. You are then in a different position to do something with that feeling. Okay. Now, that is then what the work is, learning to deal with that feeling better. And I promise, like, if you do the work, you can get to a point where in real time you're processing and you're quite unperturbed by that person's reaction. It doesn't have the same power over you. These are long-term patterns that we're breaking. You didn't learn them overnight. There's no sort of tip, tricks, hacks that you can, that I can give you that you will just take away and be able to run with and all will be fine. This is a complete rewiring of how you show up in the world, really.
Yeah. Because it's like a muscle. Like you need to, once you build it, you'll need to keep working it out.
Yeah. It's you know, the brain is amazing. Like this is where neuroplasticity comes in, right? So we would be changing how you respond to people who don't receive what you say well. We'd want you to have a bit of psychological Teflon, I call it. It
takes work. And we're learning that that seems to be one of the common things that's coming up this season of our podcast, is that this is going to take some work. And it's, you know, it's worth it, though. And it doesn't have to be grueling. And it doesn't have to mean that you have to give everything up and quit your job and, you know, go
live in a yurt.
Yeah, thank you. My brain is not firing. But it's going to take a little bit of work. And I think anything worthwhile does. So I think that's great.
Think about the return on investment. Like, think about the amount of time, Michelle, individually, collectively, that you and I have wasted in our lifetimes, right? Trying to figure out why we're so upset because someone said something, or they got upset because we did something, or what have you.
When you understand your schemas, like I call it a superpower, actually. I think it's a superpower. You get clarity very quickly, and confusion is distressing for a human being. We hate not knowing why. Oh, yeah. Once the loop's open, we want to close it. Then there's the change process, which I'll be honest is a lot more frustrating and disheartening at times, because you're then showing up and trying to do the opposite of what you feel, which, by the way, our brain isn't designed to do easily for good reason. So it's really going against the grain, which is why change is so hard. And then you can then see little micro moments where you can start doing things differently.
In season 2, we learned that it's not just about managing symptoms. It's about discovering who we are and who we can become in what's turning out to be the best times of our lives.
Season 3 launches on September 3rd with an episode about disordered eating. Turns out that those food rules and restrictions we have might actually not be so healthy after all. Think you're eating in a healthy way? Maybe think again. Tune in on September 3rd with eating disorder specialist Kyla Fox.
This podcast is for general information only. It's designed to educate, inspire, and support you on your personal journey through perimenopause. The information and opinions on this podcast are not intended to be a substitution for primary care, diagnosis, or treatment. The information on this podcast does not replace professional healthcare advice. The use of the information discussed is at the sole discretion of the listener. If you are suffering from symptoms or have questions, please consult a qualified healthcare practitioner.